Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Emily Winicky and I am the Community Engagement Coordinator here at Syracuse University. I would like to begin, as we do with all Syracuse University events, by acknowledging with respect the Onondaga Nation, firekeepers of the Haudenosaunee, the indigenous people on whose ancestral lands Syracuse University now stands. I am now honored to introduce this morning's speakers, Dr. Indu Gupta and Dr. Karen Nardella. Dr. Indu Gupta is Commissioner of Health at the Onondaga County Health Department. She completed her medical degree in India, her Master of Arts in Public Administration, and a Certificate of Advanced Study in Health Service Management and Policy from the Maxwell School at Syracuse University, and her Master of Public Health from Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland. Dr. Gupta is board certified in internal medicine and is a fellow of the American College of Physicians. Prior to her current role, she was an assistant clinical professor at the University of California, Los Angeles. As the Commissioner of Health, she dedicates all of her efforts to identify the health priorities in the community through a robust community health assessment process and works through implementing the Community Health Improvement Plan with strong community engagement. Dr. Karen Nardella is the Medical Director for Syracuse University Health Services. She received her bachelor's degree in history from Dartmouth College and her medical degree from the University of Washington School of Medicine in Seattle, Washington. A family medicine practitioner locally, she has been active staff at St. Joseph Hospital since 1997. Prior to working for Syracuse University, she served patients for the Search Clinic for the Homeless and the Baylor Family Practice Center. Dr. Nardella continues to practice with the Fairgrounds Family Physicians as well as with the Syracuse University Health Services. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Gupta and Dr. Nardella.
Good morning. Thank you for being here. And we just wanted to at least go over a few of the facts and then ask, answer, and the question to you and those who are actually looking at it online. So, coronavirus, novel coronavirus, it's in everybody's psyche right now, right? Everybody is scared, they don't know what to do, and I'm just going to give you, start with a timeline a little bit. This new virus belongs to a family of the common cold viruses, coronavirus, that's we are familiar, but when it changes its character and jumps from one species to another one, it becomes much stronger. And that's what this virus has done. And it is called novel coronavirus. Novel means new. Anything new with a new character, there are a lot of unknowns in that. So what it has done in last few months, actually, what has gotten everybody's attention. So let's start with a timeline. December 2019. I don't know how many people were paying attention to some of the news which is coming from, you know, whether it's any major news outlets or publications, that something is happening in China, Wuhan City, which is impacting quite a bit of lives in there, and almost it started to paralyze that city. It did not get people's attention until the China reported to the WHO that yes, it is happening, and they started to get involved in it. Then January 2020, we had a first case of coronavirus in the United States. First, it was in December when you're looking at Wuhan City was impacted, part of China started to have, neighboring countries you're talking about in Asia started to get impacted. It was still over there, it was not here, right? That's the psyche happens that, oh, it's not us, it's that's happening. But we live in a global world. That is an important part of fact which we need to remember. So when January 1st, when we had a case which was travel-related, it was travel-related. But then suddenly, January 30th, human-to-human transmission was reported in the United States. The same day, WHO declared it as a public health emergency in the world. That got a lot of everybody's attention. After the human transmission was declared, was identified in the United States, January 31st, President actually imposed a travel ban to China. Anybody who foreign national who are coming to United States are not going to be allowed. Those who were returning from China were going to have put in quarantine, voluntary quarantine. That's how a lot of local health departments, state and local health departments got involved, and the process of trying to prevent that prevention started. 1.5 months later now, today's March 12th, a lot of things happened since then. We have more than 125,000 cases. I think there will be more. I'm just going to go to one of the websites, I think. For the Johns Hopkins, there is a website in addition to WHO that you can actually look at how many people are getting impacted throughout the world. As of last night, more than 125,000 cases in the world were diagnosed to have COVID-19, more than 4,600 deaths, more than 67,000 have recovered. That is an important part to remember. Even though it's a serious, very serious illness, we have to look at some of the other factual find also. Many countries have been impacted throughout. It's a globally right now, and that's how the pandemic was declared by the WHO, because when you have a sustained transmission, continuous transmission worldwide of a new serious disease, that's what it's called in a way, pandemic, and that's what we are now. From New York State point of view, in United States, you have more than 1,200 people who have been diagnosed. Somewhere 36 have died. In our New York State also, multiple people have been diagnosed. A lot of hot pockets are in New York City and Westchester, and now you have probably all heard Monroe County has a case. So these things are very important for us to remember how we started to see that from December to now. For in last couple of months, things have changed drastically. And these are the facts which we have to remember. Why these are important? Because we need to prepare how to handle that. Not because of we are fearful, we have to go to the facts and try to say what we can do to help everyone to address this. So, role of health department, local health department, I think you all wonder what does the local health departments do. We get involved into any time when there is a new disease comes, or there is a outbreaks or epidemic. In this case, it has become pandemic, but we have been involved before it was declared, before it was actually declared even public health emergency. We were watching it and we were seeing what the course will be. So our first and foremost job is surveillance. Surveillance means in terms of we are looking how many cases are happening, where are they happening, and what is the path of this new infection? Is it coming our way? So we have to really look, and when it is in our community, how many people are being impacted? What kind of people are being impacted? Is it travel related? Is it a community transmission? The second part of our work is monitoring. So when travel ban was imposed for China, when people were traveling, coming back to their home country and to their hometowns, we were expected, and we are doing it, monitoring of those travelers who are returning. What it means that we ask them to be in voluntary quarantine, it means they are not going to go out of their house. They will be provided support for their food and transport, and they are not going to be transporting out unless they have a medical emergency. Their family and friends can help them, but again, trying to keep a safe distance and not to live in the same household. If you're in the same household, separate bathroom, separate bedroom, a lot of direction we give it to them, ask them to check the temperature twice a day. And if there's any symptoms, we will work with the primary care or to the hospital to coordinate transfer of patients. So that's the part of the voluntary quarantine. The other part of the health department is what we call mandatory quarantine, which is another word for isolation. So when people get infected by this, they have a positive infection. If they are in the hospital, they are going to be in isolation. But when they're discharged, medically stable to be discharged after being treated for pneumonia or after whatever they had at that time, symptoms because of COVID-19, they can go home. You don't need to be in the hospital all the time. That's what we do. People after heart attack, people after asthma or pneumonia, they get discharged after they're being treated. Hospital is a place where sickest patients should go. So when they get home, we have to make sure those people are going to be in what we call mandatory quarantine. It means they will not be allowed to get out of the house, but at the same time, we have to give them wraparound services. Commissioner's orders goes into there, so as I myself as a health commissioner will have to put the commissioner's order and ask those individuals who are tested positive and have been living at home at this point that you are ordered to stay home at this point. It's not voluntary anymore. It is enforceable because now we know this person have positive infection and we really want to make sure there is no way this person can transmit infection to anybody else. And that is a complicated issue because we have to make sure that person has all the support if they need medication, if they need food, if they have a need for mental health, anything which is needed. That's where we, as a local health department, work with our partner, Department of Social Services, community-based organization, doctors, and to make sure that these people have all the support so they can continue to recover at home and go back to your normal life. And those patients have to be, again, retested before they can be released to the community. So there are a lot of public health effort which has to be done to make sure that we are preventing any transmission of infection. The third part of the public health department is the mitigation. What is, at this point, we are in terms of prevention mode. Prevention mode, when we talk about why it's so important, because all we know, there's no vaccine for this as now, and it will be a year and a half or so, minimum a year, probably a year and a half, if you listen to Dr. Fauci, who is an NIH director. These are facts. There is no myth about that. We should not be thinking it's going to come tomorrow because it's not going to be. Medication, that's also a far-fetched idea. It's a fact. It is going to happen, but it's not going to come tomorrow or day after in a month. That takes quite some time because anytime any new medication, new vaccine is introduced, it has to go through the trial. It has to be deemed safe because do no harm is the principle, right? So that is important. So we have to have really real expectation for what is expected of the scientific community, public health community, and healthcare community. So what I'm asking, my biggest ask of all of you, is that what can you do to prevent the transmission? It's like what we all can do as an organization, as a health commissioner, I look at that what as public health community is doing. As you're looking at Dr. Nardella, she as a primary care provider, as a healthcare provider, is looking into that how she can advise the patient, how she can diagnose the patient, and how she can work with all the sectors, including ourselves, in making sure that we are there to prevent the transmission of infection so we can contain that. At the same time, I'm asking all of you to see what you can do to prevent the transmission, because you have really, really important role to play. There is a lot of information which is out there, which I'm going to show you at least some of them, that it is literally on your fingertips. Some of those things which we use the fancy name, non-pharmacological intervention, because there is no medication, so non-pharmacological intervention seems like a little more scientific. What it means, that at a personal level, how can you prevent infection? If you're sick, if you have running nose, cough, do not go, do not mingle with people. If you are if you have to be somewhere, I would say that if you're coughing, unexpectedly came, make sure that you are covering your nose and mouth and making sure that you can use those surgical masks to prevent that, to transmit the infection, putting all the droplets out on the table that you just coughed and sneezed and all over, then you're not seeing that. Somebody else comes, touch that surface, touch their face and nose and everything, and next thing, you go home, a few days later, you're sick. That is true in flu, that is true in common cold, that is true in COVID-19. And it is more crucial in COVID-19 because we don't know how it's going to impact you. More than about 80% of people actually do fairly well. They have mild illness. They don't have very severe consequences. If you are otherwise healthy, you will not get that much negative consequences. However, 20% of people, especially if you are over 60 if you have underlying illness, diabetes, asthma, COPD, any immunocompromised disease, cancer treatment, you are, you know, considered high-risk individual. So you really have your health in your hands. When I say that, I mean it. I'm not trying to make it dramatic. I am asking all of you to work with us to protect not only yourself, but also your family and friends and the community at large. It really will reduce the transmission of infection. If you remember H1N1 2009, they have been prior epidemic. Any time, or pandemic I should say that, that any time when community participation was high, in addition to the vaccines if they were available in the past, but it still takes time, the transmission of infection was reduced significantly. So I am asking you to really help us to work with you and help support the community in preventing transmission. Make the right judgment call. Make sure you are reading the right information. Do not go to any website which gives you false information. Go to the places, get the information from science-based resources. I'm talking about Center for Disease Control. I am talking about New York State Department of Health. I'm talking about Onondaga County Department of Health, Health Department. And anywhere you get the right information. The second part is that what we, in terms of when we call, how can you do, is the community non-pharmacological intervention or prevention strategies. Bigger gatherings, communal gatherings. You make the judgment call based on where are you going. There is no travel restriction within the United States at this point, but you really need to get yourself informed. If you are going to a hotspot, make sure, do you really need to be there? What your travel plan is going to be impacted? How is it going to impact your own personal health and people around you? So you have to make a judgment call at that point considering your situation. Number three is the environmental prevention efforts. As we talk about, you know, cleaning, wiping all the surfaces. I was told this is all clean, so I'm putting my hand there. I'm not coughing, so that is good. A lot of it, those things do matter. Doorknobs, the bathrooms. I'm not trying to make you crazy about that, but at the same time, do every step which you can do, because you really can make a difference in reducing the transmission. We know that, you know, it is going to happen when it happens, but you have done your part. That is important, because you can say, what I feel, what can I do, right? It's a call to action. And that's, in a way, that's what I'm asking all of you. It's, what can you do to prevent that? We all are doing it. So don't get paralyzed. Get informed. Get educated. Do not get paralyzed. Do not panic. Don't put your head in the sand, because it is going to be here at any time. We really need to be prepared to make sure that we are doing our best. So with that, I'm going to have Dr. Karen Nardella talking about that, how they help the public health community by identifying the cases and do the testing and what following the guidelines they do, and at the same time, how they work with the health department in a pretty much daily, hourly basis in a way, that we really are working together with all the health system, four health systems actually. I'm talking about upstate, both community campus and downtown campus, St. Joseph's Hospital, Crouse Hospital, Veterans Hospital, and outpatient practices. We are all working as a health department with all of them. Colleges, daycares, nursing homes, the secondary schools, all of them, I think we are working with everyone. Our county executive has been very involved in that. Myself and my deputy county executive Rooney and county executive Ryan McMahon and our commissioner of emergency management, Dan Weirs, we meet regularly on daily basis, go over things, and during the day we continue to update ourselves and continue to work with our partners. To Dr. Nardella, we talk so many times, as well as to our health system partners. So I just want people to rest assured, the people who should be involved at the organizational level, at the physician level, are continue to stay engaged. I have my senior leadership in health department with my medical director, with my deputy commissioner and director of disease control and my nursing leadership. We are all continue to have the dialogue and trying to find, strategize how we can handle in our community. So Dr. Nardella.
Thank you so much for having me here. She said, I'm the medical director at the Barnes Center for the Arch Health Services at Syracuse University. Prior to this, as you may or may not know, we had a mumps outbreak at Syracuse University, and we had a case of meningitis since I've been there, and one case of active TB. But by far, this coronavirus is much more far-reaching, and it's a global health crisis, so it's been a little bit more dramatic. So as far as the beginning of when this started, as Dr. Gupta said, back in January, we started hearing reports, you know, about this outbreak of a novel virus in Wuhan. And, you know, I'm not sure if I wasn't in healthcare that I would have paid that much attention to it initially, but of course I am. And, of course, SU has a large Chinese population, so I noticed right away that that was happening. There's 2,500 students from China. The good news is that in early January, it wasn't nearly the numbers that we're seeing now, so it was just beginning. And like a city of Wuhan has 11 million people, so when you're talking about people coming over, it's still a fairly low risk at that point. The other thing is, luckily by early January, most of our students from that area were already here. Had already been here for 2 weeks. One of the first things we did, though, is identify that there were a handful of students who had been here less than 2 weeks, and we closely monitored them. As Dr. Gupta explained, you know, they would make sure they would call us if they had any symptoms, monitor for the symptoms that we explained, and then, you know, they all were fine, and again, it was just a handful of students. But unfortunately, towards the end of the month, we started seeing increasing numbers of cases in Wuhan, plus spreading all over China. And at that point, we felt it was safer to tell any students returning from China. And again, that was very few at that point, because luckily all the undergraduates had already started and been here for 2 weeks. So, but we did ask them to stay home for 2 weeks if they were just coming from China, and again, monitor for symptoms. Right about that point is when the government instituted the travel ban, so that problem of monitoring people went away. So at that point, you know, we were just starting to see a few cases in the U.S., you know, popping up that were travel-related in Washington and New York. So, but here in Central New York, we felt very safe. And so we kind of went about our normal business, but we did always ask students about their travel history when we evaluated them. So that's a really important thing for people in primary care, is to find out where people have been. I think the university was really good about providing support for the students from China, because, you know, obviously they were very concerned about family members at home, and we made sure that we didn't tolerate any bias towards any students from there. And some organizations on campus created care packages to send back with supplies for people in the Wuhan area. So, you know, after that, it was kind of business as usual, except for, you know, being a little bit more careful. Obviously, after that, around the world, there were spikes in cases in Italy and South Korea, so then that brought up other issues. We have foreign study groups in Europe, so wisely, the university brought all those students back, but of course not to campus. They were asked to stay home until after spring break, which was almost 3 weeks from when that program closed. So, and then a couple of grad students might have come from South Korea, but again, they were asked to stay home for 2 weeks. So we really just continued to see our patients as usual. However, as this cases a few weeks ago started to increase all around the United States, we had to do some things in the health services to be a little bit more proactive. We wanted to decrease chance exposures to this virus. The population at Syracuse is very young, and most of those people would only get a mild illness. They wouldn't be particularly sick. So we had to just institute some universal precautions, things like anybody who was coming in with cough and fever and flu-like symptoms, we would have them wear a mask in the waiting room, ask them to use hand sanitizer when they came in. We would also clean every exam room between each patient with the sanitizer rather than just, you know, doing it periodically. We would also have patients call if they have any travel history. We did not want them just showing up in the waiting room just to possibly expose other people. More recently, we've instituted some even stricter protocols. We have a dividing the waiting room into more of team one and team two, but one side being more for sick people and other for well, so to prevent chance exposure for people. And also dividing the clinic into sides that are more for one side for well and one side for sick. We've also stopped online scheduling for cold symptoms and flu symptoms so that we can triage them over the phone and make sure that they really need to come in. The other thing is an issue is masks. We were putting them on the sick students because we need to conserve our supplies and not use a mask for every provider, every nurse, and then possibly run out, because as this progresses, we may need more and more masks. The next thing I was going to talk about is how we evaluate the sick people. The first thing is, you know, the last 2 months, we really didn't feel there was any risk in Central New York. There weren't cases. Obviously, that is likely to change. But at that point, you know, we didn't feel people needed to go to the hospital. We just would evaluate them at our clinic. We would obviously find out about travel history. That was really important. We would also look for another diagnosis. If someone had fever and cough, we would immediately test them for the flu. And unfortunately, a lot of students had the flu, but fortunately, they would know what they had, and it was kind of a relief. Like, I have the flu, I don't have this other virus. The other thing is we would look at CDC guidelines. Really, the people that were supposed to be tested are people who had known contact with COVID-19, and of course, that was nobody around here. People with a travel history, like to Italy or South Korea, and then only if you were sick enough to be hospitalized. So we really, there weren't a lot of tests, any tests at first, and we don't have the ability to test. So really, it was very a controlled situation, and most people did not fit that criteria. Of course, that's going to be changing, as you know, because we have cases in Westchester and New York City and now Monroe County. But the good news is we're going to have more testing, I'm sure, by the end of the week, and some of the commercial labs are coming up with testing. So that's going to change things a little bit in terms of what we do and how many people we test. The main thing is, you know, we want to have people call before they would ever, like, go come to the office, or, you know, call before they would just go to the emergency room. They are going to get overwhelmed if people just go there whenever they have a cough or a fever. I'd like to talk a little bit next about SU's response to this health crisis. They've had a very aggressive and comprehensive response. They've had a lot of education, a big educational campaign. They sent out numerous emails explaining about the travel ban, in terms of, and not so much the travel ban, but like restrictions about not coming to campus for 2 weeks if you have a history of high-risk travel, about what symptoms to look for, about what how to best, you know, prevent yourself from getting the virus, all the hand washing and not touching your face and your mouth and your nose, all of those kinds of things. So that was sent out repeatedly to the students and the staff. The other thing is, as Dr. Gupta said, I've been in constant consultation with the county, with phone calls Saturday night at 10 o'clock, you know, just about various things, a student who may have been in a certain place and should we test them, you know, that kind of thing, or should we send them to get tested, because SUNY Upstate was really the only place to get tested. And then approach to how we would handle things. And the administration and SU has been in direct contact with the health department here locally and as well as at the state level. The administration is consulting with the state health department in terms of how, you know, as a higher ed institution, how to handle the situation. We've been part of a regional task force with hospitals and schools on, you know, how to best manage this situation as a group. They've also been planning for over a month as far as contingency plans on if we had to go, close down the classrooms and go to more remote learning. And as you know, as of Friday, the university will no longer have classes for a couple of weeks, and after that we'll reevaluate. But they've been doing this planning for a number of weeks. But the main thing, you know, with all of this is not to panic and do the right things. And the right things are what Dr. Gupta already said, washing your hands constantly, especially if, you know, touching a doorknob or touching a surface that, you know, is not at your house, coughing into your elbow, not into your hands, avoiding touching your nose, mouth, and eyes. And the main thing is, you know, social distancing, not going to crowded places, concerts, busy restaurants, all of that kind of thing. And especially if you're older or you have health problems, is to really avoid going out and staying home, because that's how you're going to protect yourself. And the other thing is that people who are sick shouldn't be going to work. They should stay home. And I think companies and places of employment will understand that at this point. So I think that's really all I have to say at this point.
So one thing, if I can add, is that what Dr. Nardella mentioned, one thing we are asking people, if you, there is a high index of suspicion, people who have traveled, or if you have any question regarding, if you have mild illness, coughing, you know, feeling not good, and maybe have flu-like symptoms, you're worried about, oh, could I have COVID-19? Depending on your travel history and all, I think we are asking people to make sure you call the doctor's office. Do not just walk over there. Do not go to the urgent care. Just walk in, or do not go to the emergency room. The use of emergency room should be for acute patients who require urgent attention and intervention. But if you have these kind of mild symptoms, contact your healthcare provider. It's just so crucial, because you are protecting, you are getting a guidance on the phone, and your doctor is going to actually screen you on the phone and say, ask all the right questions, and based on that question will advise you what is the next step. If they feel you need to come into the office, they can check you out based on your history. You could have common cold or flu. If they think that that is not the case and you have a high index of suspicion for COVID-19, they will refer you to the right place, because the offices don't have the capacity at this point to do the testing. It is important. So my biggest ask is that, in addition to what I said, I'm adding one more thing, is to make sure you call your doctor before you go to anywhere in terms of your symptoms. That is important. And before we go into the question and answer, I just wanted to show you, this time I'm going to do it right. So this is the our health department website. So there is a web page as the coronavirus. It's a button. If you click on it, it takes you to a it takes you to a landing page which has compilation of things from CDC and New York State Department of Health. We started to add some of the local things there. All the frequently asked questions are there. So I would urge all of you to make sure you can, you're most welcome to go to CDC website directly. We try to structure that so it's easier for everybody. So if you look in that, at home, get your household ready. So if you click on that, these are all active links, right? At work, health cares, large community events, at school. So if you click on these things, there are checklists, there are very clear directions, and it's continued to modify. So as CDC learns from the different community, they started to make changes there. So it's a pretty much live thing there that you will get pretty much active information. So I would urge all of you to get familiarized this website, put that in your favorites, in your smartphones and your computer. I know most of the people, including seniors, are pretty computer savvy nowadays. And I would think that it could, if you don't have computer, you know, your family or friends, somebody can actually make sure that they can provide you continued information. We have a button for the New York State Department of Health website, because I'm asking you to get information from these two places. So if you click on, there's a 1-888 number, which is actually a hotline. And if you click on the main number, it takes you to the department's website. And there are much information about it. It says information for healthcare providers preparing for COVID-19. How many cases, as you can see, total positive cases as of it's now is 216. They have not updated for Nassau County yet. But that's where you get it, because it happened late night, seems like. So they will update. There is lots of information there. The press releases. So between combination, do not get overwhelmed. Stick to the area where you think it's more important. What as a citizen, what as a community resident will be helpful for you. So continue to have your dialogue with your friends and family. You can make your Facebook group, or you can make a phone group. But do not go to the website which are not really authentic, because there is a lot of rumor goes on and people panic. That's what I don't want. We don't need to panic. When we have a problem, it is a serious problem, and we really need to get informed, we need to get engaged, and we really need to say that how can we participate in it. That's what my ask of all of you. So thank you.
All right, so we're going to start with a couple questions from the audience, and then we got some emailed questions that I'll read off in a second. So we'll start right here.
If you're scheduled for a routine blood test for cholesterol or thyroid or something at the end of month, March or early April, is it advisable to skip that? I have to go to a lab because my doctor's office can't deal with my small veins, or they haven't yet. but, you know, these are not important health issues, and I'm wondering about waiting.
So you can act.
Well, I mean, I think that if it can be done 2 or 3 months down the road and it's not really like crucial to be at that point, and cholesterol really isn't that important to do it now versus June, then exactly. So I think, you know, it's anything like that to push off and avoid going into a crowded lab, it's fine to do that.
I will just add to that, if you do need anything which is really important and your doctor wants you to do, we do not have a case as of now. We do not have community spread. So if you have to go, you have to take care of yourself. You have to go with your daily life. Again, do not get paralyzed. That's important part of that.
Right.
You are going to go grocery shopping. You are going to live your life. And you can make sure that you have a hand sanitizer with you. If there is a restroom, some different places, make sure you wash your hands. And if it's possible, that we always say that 6 feet distance, which in a small waiting room, it's not possible. And if you're sick, do not go. There is no question, reschedule, because you are opening door for other people to get affected also. It could be just the common cold. We are not talking COVID-19. This is a common sense thing. We ask everybody to do that. So take that information based on what is your need at that time, is this time. If you're just going for a routine preventive thing, is that something? If you're very worried, it's okay to wait. But we don't have any reason to say at this point, do not go anywhere. And so make the right judgment, because people do need sometimes medication monitoring. It affects the kidney function. It affects potassium. You know, there are diabetes things which really need to be taken care of it. But if it's not that urgent, so make the judgment call. And that's where I am talking about, that we continue to discuss that. If you are informed, if you look at that, what can I do to take care of myself? Do I really need to go to these routine things? We really don't want people not to go for your routine care. It's okay to do it. But when it becomes a problem, we certainly will say, do not go. If you can avoid it, don't, right? So that would be the way.
Hello. Thanks. Couple questions. So right now, upstate's the only place where people can be tested. Are they depending on Wadsworth Lab still? We don't have any local setup for running the tests yet.
Right. So at this, sorry.
So is that anticipated, and what kind of supply of testing? How what's our capacity for testing?
Right. So at this point, Wadsworth is the only lab which is testing. Actually, LabCorp has come online. And Quest is going to be. Quest has been testing in West Coast quite a bit. So there's a validation process which the labs have to go through. So it is going to go live. I have not looked at my emails this morning. Maybe I got the email that Quest is alive. I don't know at this point. But that is going to happen. And also Upstate is working towards to get that. As far as the supplies goes, that we have been assured that based on what the assessment of the physician. That's where the role of primary care physician, emergency room physician is so significant that they really need to make a good clinical judgment based on a art of history taking. We talk about in medicine, what is the art of history taking? Go into detail history taking of the patient. Make sure you covered all the ends, that your travel history, what are your symptoms, were you in close contact with anybody, were you in some hot spots even in the United States. That gets the high index of suspicion, so doctor can say, yes, I think I would like to have a test. I would like to order the test for you. Mm-hmm. It's not that everybody who have a running nose and cough and have no other risk factor at this point, should just get tested. Because we don't want to take up all the supplies, and then for those people who actually should be tested, next thing we don't have it. So that's the biggest part. The physician have a really significant role to play, especially when we don't have any cases at this point. These situations change when you have a community transmission, when you have three or four cases, then we feel like we have no idea who could be in contact with where. So then it becomes a little bit more widely available. It is at the discretion of a physician. New York State Department of Health given a very clear guideline, as you can see in the New York State Department of Health website. They are all public, and there are 5 criteria which gives a leverage to the primary care physician, emergency room physician, to order the test. It was very controlled before in terms of that local health department has to say yay or nay to that, but at this point they are only going to call us or to the state if there is a low, mild suspicion, but we are not sure. Can we have a brainstorming and try to get a little bit thing, and then go from there?
So everything has to go to the ED right now, essentially.
Right.
Does the ED report to you? Does Upstate report to you every day how many test kits they have, for instance?
No. At this point, we do not get report, but they are getting overwhelmed. There is no question. That's the conversation we have with the leadership. And we are working with them to find alternate way of testing someplace. So these are work in progress as we speak. We are in literally constant communication and having a task force making those kind of headways and trying to identify how can we test as our needs increase. This is what the preparedness is all about.
I'm going to read off a question from one of our live stream viewers. Can a cough or runny nose turn into coronavirus?
Well, nothing turns into a coronavirus. It either is or it isn't. So for some people, the COVID-19 could be as mild as cold symptoms, especially young people. But it's not like it turns into it.
So one of those things I will just add to that is that's where the people's role come into the picture. You really have to think that and trace your path and see where you were. If you are in a community where nothing has happened, it's very least likely, it's a very low probability. And if you have been in somewhere, in Westchester, in the hot spots there, in Seattle where there are neighborhoods, if you have interacted, if you have come from those high-risk countries and you are having those symptoms, yes, that could be a possibility. And that's what you got to communicate with the doctor. And as Dr. Nardella mentioned, that it doesn't turn into that. It is or it isn't.
And we have one more question, and then we'll go back to the audience. Are there protocols for grocery shopping? Should you buy fresh produce that may have been handled by someone else? What about the carts or handicap carts that
right.
people use?
So these are good questions. These are the things which every organization is dealing with, how to sanitize and how to keep every door handle, every cart, and everything. These grocery stores have their preparedness plan, so they will be working, and they should be working towards that. And regarding handling the food and everything, there is no restriction at this point that we feel that has to be a consideration. At this point, I think people need to live their lives as best as they can without paralyzing themselves. It is very, very important. And also, if you have a hand sanitizer, if you have some wipes, you want to wipe that cart down, go for it. I tell my kids the same thing. It's prevention. And the good part of that is at this point, it will reduce the cases of flu as we are seeing the downtrending, but it will actually some good unintended consequences for the good will be the what we have a lot of viruses floating around. Non-COVID, we are not talking different other than the COVID-19 disease. They are going to have reduction. So that's what we are looking for. So taking actions to protect your own health, I think it's very crucial. I don't know, Dr. Nardella has to add something.
Yeah, I mean, after you go to the grocery store, you wash your hands or use hand sanitizer. You don't touch your face when you're at the grocery store, and you wipe down the carts if you feel like that's the best thing to do.
Right.
I'm going to go places, but that's what I'm going to do. I'm right. Not going to touch my hand or my face unless I wash my hands.
Yeah, and I love to cook and I love to eat. I have to go to grocery shopping. It's important. Yeah, and then stay informed. That's the part of that.
Good morning. So far, this is the most political disease that I've been aware of. Well, maybe AIDS would fit that category also. So what can we do to assure ourselves that in Onondaga County it doesn't also become political, that Krause is treated the same as St. Joe's, is treated the same as upstate, et cetera?
Yeah. So I can tell you as a health commissioner, which reports to the county executive, I'm appointed by both state and the county, is that health commissioner is neutral. There is no politics here, as is when you see the NIH director, Dr. Fauci, right? So the leadership at those public health institutions has nothing to do with the politics. We say what the facts are. We are science-based. We work with all our health, all the partners. When I'm talking about upstate, Krause, St. Joe's, VA, outpatient providers, educational institution, there is no politics there. We treat them equally. There is no preference of this versus this. The upstate comes into the picture, which you are hearing, is that because they have some testing, advanced testing in terms of the normal screening after the flu, they have a respiratory viral panel, which other places don't have it. So people end up going there because the way the test was is set up is that there are negative tests before they can do the test for the COVID-19. It has nothing to do with the politics. It will be in best interest of for the upstate. If you ask the leadership of upstate, they would want everywhere patients to go wherever they want. That's what we want. There is no restriction. There is no recommendation to go this place to this place. The primary care actually work with the patient and will coordinate with that. At this point, the testing, the physicians who are equipped to do that, and based on what available testing before the COVID for the coronavirus is the key factor. A lot of times upstate is end up getting it. And rest assured, there is no politics in here. I can tell you very honestly, and I would ask you to put trust in the public health system. I am a physician, I am a mother.
And the purse strings?
The purse string has nothing to do with that. I think all the public health department and all the elected official have, I can tell you about our community because I talk to our legislature, to our county executive, and on an ongoing basis, everybody is on board. What can we do to support you? What can we do, not only to talking to our constituents, but also what do you need? At this point, we are in a preparedness mode, and I do not think that is a political issue in our community. And I feel very comfortable saying at this point, and I'm proud to be a health commissioner here because I have such a great partners, both all in the health systems, the doctors, the community-based organization, and leadership here at the county level and city. And I have to specifically add that part from the office of mayor, from the Mayor Wash and his leadership. We are all in connectivity. There is no disconnection there.
There has been advice to avoid cruise ships, particularly for older people. What about transcontinental flights? Is that something that we should be concerned about? And second question is, exactly what is a testing kit? What is in it?
Well, the way that you're tested is they use two swabs, one in your nose and one in your mouth, and they go in a little test tube, and then they're sent to a lab, and then they test for the virus based from those two swabs. Yeah, that's basically it. It's kind of like testing for the flu, but they do two sites, the mouth and the nose. My feeling on flights, I mean, if you're have a lot of underlying health conditions that you should probably avoid that and try to avoid airline travel. If you don't have any underlying health problems and you really feel like it's essential, you really need to go somewhere, you just have to be extra careful with hand washing and, you know, maybe wiping down your tray table and your armrest with sanitizing wipes, because I understand they really deep clean the planes only at the end of the day, but that way you can at least clean the area around you. And like I said, don't touch your face and just be extra careful. But it's kind of, you know, discouraged now, but some people are gonna travel and you just have to weigh the risks.
So in terms of cruise ship, you ask, there is a travel advisory from CDC very clearly, because a lot of people who go into the cruise are seniors. You know that. We all know that, because this is the best time of your life. You want to enjoy it to the best, but you don't want to come home sick, right? That's very important. And then get quarantined somewhere. So best thing is prevention. And that's what the advisory is, that please, if you have these things, do not go there. That is, it's not enforceable. This is a free country, this is a democracy, people will do. Information is empowerment, and people should make the judgment call that we should not go, because the cruise ship will be there, the cruise will be there. We will go through the hump, we'll go through the difficult time, it will go down. There is no question that, you know, we have gone through multiple similar things with the pandemics, whether you're talking 1400, from cholera to pandemic flu, Spanish flu, all these things have their own life course. What we are trying to do is trying to put all these prevention strategies, making sure that people make the right judgment call in terms of social distancing, trying to avoid those things, so many people don't get infected. We are talking about the peak of many people. So if you look at the graph, when I say that, making this note, I wish I had that picture there. I didn't want to do PowerPoint because it kind of takes people away and get dazed. But if you look at that, how many people in a graph will get impacted, you see a peak. What we are trying to do by having all these things, making people these decisions on their own, that less people will get impacted, and then we will have kind of, it will go down. And same thing for the air travel. There is no typical advisory for at this point. If you are, there are international travel, which has been pretty much, you know about their level 3 and level 2. If you go to the CDC website, you should look into the where the travel advisory is. And I would strongly recommend you to follow on a daily basis, especially if you're considering to travel. They do update that. They put new guidance there. And base your decision based on that fact. If you're not sure, based on your condition, as Dr. Nardella mentioned, is that you have to talk to whoever you're going with, your friends and family, or to your kids, and say, what can we do? What should we do at this point? It's where your participation come into the picture. Because at this point, we are not telling anybody not to go in where there is no problem. So a lot of time, but still there are concerns. You know, there could be people who may have used that same place, and you will come home and you will feel uncomfortable. So that's the gray area where we are asking people to be proactive and taking matter in their hand to make the right judgment without panicking. I'm going to continue to remind, there is no reason to panic. It's reason to be concerned. And what can you do to protect yourself?
We've got a question from our online audience. As human service agencies plan, is there any specific guidance for organizations providing direct care to vulnerable populations?
So our human service agencies are, we have a lot of conversations with them. County agencies, which are Department of Social Services, Department of Children and Family Services, homeless shelter, overlook homeless shelter, they are in communication with those community-based organizations, both from county executive's office and the agency-wise. So these are the things which are in continuous dialogue. If you go into the, again, I refer to the CDC guidance, New York State Department of Health guidance, if those are regulated agencies, if they have some directive, they are getting direct information from the state, and what to do, how to protect yourself. They have like a checklist. It's like a preparedness, right? All the organization who serve the community should have a preparedness plan. that, kind of dust it off and say, what are we supposed to do? And then prepare that. And any organization can't do it alone. It's literally a teamwork. So as we are talking about that, we are working together to make sure we share information, we support each other, and we work with the community leadership. But I'm not saying elected leadership. I'm talking about community leadership, those people who are engaged in it, and say, how can we, what are the things which our vulnerable population need, and go back to the resources and try to find the resources. We need to continue feedback in that regard.
Yeah, I think we have time for one more question over here.
Yes, is there any interaction with the VA hospital here in Syracuse, being that they have a lot of older patients coming from all over New York State, not just Onondaga County?
Thanks. Right. So we have actually an emergency management group which regularly meets, and when we have this COVID-19 issue, they have been invited, they have participated, their infection control department is in very regular contact with them. They get all the information. And yes, there has been a communication with them. New York State Department of Health also has worked with them and have continued to provide guidance, because they don't come under them. They are under federal, but they are part of the community. I can tell you about our community. I'm sure this is the same applicable to the regional one. And if they are not doing it, I would ask them to do that.
All right, unfortunately, we are out of time. So please join me in thanking Dr. Gupta and Dr. Nardella.